Coast AQMD. We're about to start the update, the public update. We're going to start off by making introductions on our end over here.
Wayne Nastry, Executive Officer.
Jill Wynot, Chief Operating Officer.
Shara Snyder, Compliance and Enforcement.
Derek Alatorres, Deputy Executive Officer for Public Affairs.
Amir Deshbach, Engineering and Permitting.
Fabian Wesson, Public Affairs.
Ricardo Rivera, Public Affairs.
Jason Lowe, Monitoring and Analysis.
Susan Nakamura, Planning and Rules.
Kurt Weiss, General Counsel.
Sam Atwood, Media Officer.
Anybody else from AQMD on the line?
Joe Tadoss, Planning and Rules.
Thank you, Joe Kay, and thank you, Sam. Okay, we'll start with the updates. We'll start with enforcement, and Dr. Shara Snyder will give the update.
Thank you. We're continuing to do follow-up inspections in the city of Paramount. We had, as you know, issued a number of notices to comply to facilities, either requesting information or directing them to obtain permits. And we're continuing to follow up. Some of the facilities that we've directed to get permits have submitted applications, which is great. We'll follow up with the rest of them over the course of the next couple of weeks to ensure that everyone has achieved compliance with those notices to comply.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Snyder. And next will be monitoring, and that will be by Dr. Jason Lowe.
Good evening, everyone. The update for monitoring is that the results were finalized and posted on the AQMD website for the ambient samples that were collected through January 10th, 2017. The highest value for January 7th was 3.0 nanograms per cubic meter, which was at site 15. And the highest value for January 7th, or January 10th, was 2.21 at site 8. And there was also a 1.1 nanogram per cubic meter at site 7. These values do maintain currently the sampling day average for aircraft at 1.0 nanograms per cubic meter. And the results were sent to aircraft indicating the elevated value. The sampler that was over located at Jackson was moved on Saturday to Gaines Elementary School to collect its first sample. And also, AQMD deployed two additional sites starting for collection on January 13th. Those sites are on the corner of Jackson and Minnesota, and that's in between two facilities, Matco and also Press Forge. And also, a sampler was deployed at the corner of Rosales Alley and Madison. The results from the January 13th and 16th will be posted and finalized and posted this later this week. And the next sampling day is scheduled for Thursday, the 19th. And that concludes the summary.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Next, we're going to have Susan Nakamura, who's going to give an update on from the planning and rules side.
So staff is continuing to work on proposed Rule 1430. It's the rule for metal forging facilities, and it controls emissions from their grinding and metal cutting operations. We have a public workshop scheduled for Thursday here at the district offices at 2 p.m., and then we have a public consultation meeting scheduled for next week on the 25th in Paramount Community Center at 5:30.
Is that it? Okay, thank you very much, Susan. Next, we'll get an update from legal department. That'll be Mr. Kurt Weiss.
Last week, the AQMD hearing board entered an order for abatement. It was a stipulated order for abatement against Anaplex. The key provisions of the order for abatement were substantially identical to the provisions in the order for abatement involving aircraft. Namely, both facilities are required to shut down if the monitors outside the facility exceed a certain health protective limit for hexavalent chrome. With the entry of the Anaplex order, both facilities that the AQMD identified as contributing to the high hexavalent chrome levels in the city of Paramount are now under enforceable orders.
Okay, thank you very much, Kurt. Media, Sam, Matt, what do you have an update from media?
Yes, thank you, Derek. We issued a press release last week detailing the hearing board order that Kurt just described. It's posted to the AQMD.gov website, and we're now working on a Spanish translation, which should be posted very shortly. And that's it for media.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll have an update from Amir. Amir will talk about any permitting issues.
Good evening. Anaplex, pursuant to their order, is required to submit new permit applications for equipment operating without a permit or contrary to their existing permit conditions by close of business this Friday afternoon. We also had a conference call with Aerocraft this afternoon discussing permitting requirements for installing additional controls for their grinding operation. Again, this was done in pursuant to condition number 7 of their order of abatement.
All right, thank you very much, Amir. Next, public affairs. The only update I have is that we are continuing to put the recording, the audio recordings of the Tuesday call up on the web. So this one should be up later on this week, hopefully by Thursday at the latest. We have staff that needs to convert it and then put it up to the web. Again, if you would like to submit questions tonight, please submit them to publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. That's publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. We've already received 2 emails from Michelle Lewis. So in the first one, she said, please clarify the statements put out to both Paramount Unified School District employees via email and sent home to parents, which states, air quality testing performed by SCAQMD over the past 3 years and continuing today in schools throughout the district has resulted in SCAQMD's determination that air pollution in our schools is at low levels according to the criteria and standards. We fully understand that this issue has raised concern for our community. However, it should be reiterated that SCAQMD tests have shown low levels according to their data and testing standards. Jason, you want to touch on that one?
Yeah.
Or Susan will?
Yeah. So this morning I spoke to Michelle Lewis in regards to this particular email, and I think that there's a little bit more in the email. Do you want to read the whole thing and I could respond?
Okay, so there's a lot. So I just was going to break it down by sections. But okay, and then the second part, it says, email to employees and school board states very much the same information as community letter with added statement. It should be stated again that no air tests have resulted in troublesome levels of hexavalent chromium at any of our school sites. Contrary to public opinion, these conclusions continue to be well below levels of concern. When I asked Dr. Perez via email about these statements, the reply stated, quote, it is what the experts are reporting, that being SCAQMD, close quote. I spoke with Susan on the phone this morning and we discussed the fact that there are very few results so far from very few school sites. Susan pointed out that while some test results are 5 times higher than the 0.05 average, close or open parenthesis, 0.24, 0.26, 0.28, close parenthesis, I needed to look at the overall average of the numbers and compare to 0.13 basin average rather than look at isolated days. Although the results, open parenthesis, when averaged together, close parenthesis, appear to be near the basin average, so far for those limited readings, the statements to the public seem to be far-reaching. Sites like Tanner, Gaines, and Lincoln still do not have monitors yet, so how can SCAQMD say there is no concern? Can you clarify for me what the experts, can you clarify for me what the, quote, experts, that being SCAQMD, close quote, are saying officially to the superintendent at this point about the air quality at schools that would lead her to believe everything is fine? Did you, in fact, open quote, determine that air pollution in our schools is at low levels, close quote? I've seen the very limited data collected so far and I do not know how the SCAQMD can make a broad statement that would include all schools in Paramount Unified School District as having low levels of air pollution. There were many upset teachers and parents who got the letter and or email telling me and others that they thought these statements were misleading. It is my sincere hope that the testing at the school sites does eventually show all schools in Paramount Unified School District to be safe zones for teachers and students, free of dangerous levels of toxins. However, I am very confused by the broad statement being put out to everyone in Paramount Unified School District so prematurely and based on such limited data. A written reply to this email question is requested, please.
So, over the weekend, I had received an email from Michelle Lewis in regards to the similar to what was stated here. And so I spoke to Michelle this morning, and we discussed what she had mentioned here. And I told her I would call the Paramount Unified School District. So I have a call in to Ruben Frutos to basically explain that our comments were based on the data that we had, which was very limited. So it's at that time maybe 5 data points, and then for the specific schools that we had done testing, and that we have plans to do additional testing. But when we report information and when we present it on our website, it's only for those specific dates that we have data collected for and for the specific schools. So we'll clarify to the Paramount Unified School District in terms of when we're talking about the data, we're talking about specific days, and then maybe they might want to caveat in their reports to other folks in their communication the specific dates of the monitoring and for the specific school, so there's not a misleading statement.
So Michelle, we'll go ahead and email you the response also, is that because you did request that. Michelle, you did have a follow-up question, and it states, I support Robina's suggestion that the definition of schools expand to include early childhood education sites. Not all ECE, early childhood education schools, are housed on K-12 campus. State-funded public schools such as Early Head Start, Head Start, and preschool should be included in the definition of a school, even though they may not be housed on a school campus. Private preschools need to be included as well. Most preschool students do not qualify for state-funded preschool, and parents have to pay for the private preschool for their young children. These children should be under the same protections from toxins as K-12 students, especially since they are in a high-risk group. Where do you stand on this final draft language for PR, proposed Rule 1430?
So for proposed Rule 1430, this issue came up in the last working group meeting last week. And so staff is incorporating a provision that we would expand the definition of school to be preschool, Head Start, pre-Head Start, and schools within 1,000 feet. Those particular facilities would need to put on total enclosure with negative air. Other facilities would be required to have a total enclosure on top of air pollution controls for their individual grinding stations.
Thank you. Identify yourself.
No, that was Susan Nakamura.
Thank you, Susan. Again, if there's any questions, please submit them to publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. That's publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. We'll be waiting for emails. Okay, we got a question from Lisa Lappin. So the question is, will a monitor be put back on Jackson? When we asked for a monitor to be put on Gaines, that did not mean to the exclusion of Jackson, where there has been cancer at Jackson among students and staff. please monitor this school and closely at large forging companies nearby, including Weber. I'm not sure what you mean on isn't the basin average 0.05. I'm not sure what you meant, Lisa. So wouldn't a 0.28 reading at Keppel be considered a potential red flag? Would you be willing to conduct Edison pole testing in this area? How long will you be continuing monitoring in Paramount? So why don't we leave that up to Dr. Lowe to answer those questions.
Sure. So the first part is, will the monitor be put back on Jackson? So I think there was a discussion in terms of that Jackson and Gaines are on the same property, and it was our desire to put it closer to Weber, taking in the input from everybody, and we appreciate that input. And we worked with Paramount Unified and the school to be able to put it at Gaines. So the advantage of putting it at Gaines is that it's protective, meaning that we would expect higher levels at Gaines than we would at Jackson. So if we see what we would consider typical levels at Gaines, then it would follow that Jackson, which is about 500 feet downwind, would also be protective, also given that we had a few data points there as well. So if we do see something over at the Gaines Elementary School, then definitely we can revisit. I mean, a lot of our decisions are based upon the data. We have a schedule just to make sure that, you know, for a survey, we can have a plan to kind of move around to make sure that we can cover more area. With regards to your second question, please, or comment, please monitor closely at large forging communities. As mentioned, we did add an additional sampler between, it's basically downwind of Matt Cook and a little bit nearby Press Ford. So we are looking at other, placing other monitors of other facilities of potential concern.
So the next question is, so wouldn't a 0.28 reading at Keppel be considered a potential red flag?
So for Keppel, the
they're just pulling up some data right now.
Okay, so I guess for Keppel, this is Susan Nakamura. For Keppel, January 10th was 0.26, but the other levels at Keppel, there's three other valid samples. On December 23rd was 0.10, December 25th, 0.03, and December 29th, 0.12. I think the average at Keppel was around 0.13, but we'll continue to monitor and watch Keppel and to look at those levels. But what you would want to look at is look at the average. Although you may have one level that's elevated compared to the other dates, I think we need to look at, you know, more holistically in the average.
So the other question that she had was, would you be willing to conduct Edison pole testing in this area being around Keppel?
So Keppel is upwind. If we have, I think we'll take input from where our inspection teams have given us. If we do see any results at the Keppel site that would kind of indicate that there's a potential source, then we would look to areas to deploy kind of more of our portable monitors. But as Susan mentioned, we'll be looking at that average and basing our decision based upon that average.
And then the last question she has is, how long will you be continuing monitoring in Paramount?
This is Kurt Weiss, the general counsel. The order for abatement incorporates risk reduction plans that will include a monitoring component. Those risk reduction plans take at least a year to fully implement. So monitoring will continue in Paramount for a considerable amount of time.
Thank you, Kurt. Again, if you have any questions, please submit them to publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. So I just want to thank everybody for being on the call today. We have about over 20 people on the call. That's a really good number for concerned people there in Paramount. We're still going to be on the call waiting for additional email questions. So Lisa, you have another one. So the question is, are you concerned that the city of Paramount only provided you 88 metal companies? Have you inquired why they failed to provide dozens of other metal companies? Will those companies be looked at closely? Will all schools in Paramount Unified School District be monitored? So did I understand that you will not be monitoring Jackson as well? 9 people called from Gaines complaining about odors at Gaines on Friday. 6 teachers called from Lincoln regarding odors on Friday. What will AQMD do about these ongoing concerns? Why don't we go to the first part of the question is, are you concerned that the city of Paramount only provided 88 companies? I'll let Cher Snyder.
Hi, this is Cher. So the city did provide us with a list of about 88 metal companies, and these were companies that have business licenses to operate in the city of Paramount. So there are some companies that may not need business licenses to operate. They simply provided us with the list of those that they had on record with them. And as you may recall, we did multi-agency inspections of quite a number of facilities in Paramount, went door to door in a particular area to see if we could actually identify any other possible operations that were not accounted for by the City of Paramount's list of licensed facilities, as well as facilities that might not have been accounted for in our own permitting database. And we're continuing to evaluate compliance at a number of those facilities. Basically, the ones that we had directed to get a permit, we're making sure that they, in fact, have submitted applications to us for permits, and we hope to be able to close those out and check them off our list at some point fairly soon. You had also asked or mentioned the number of people that had called from Gaines that were complaining about odors there on Friday, and also indicated, Lisa, that 6 teachers had called from Lincoln about odors on Friday as well. We are continuing to respond to complaints out in that area. As I indicated to you when we spoke a little bit earlier this evening, we are also continuing to do odor surveillance in the area. We commit to keeping that up for as long as is necessary, but we intend to have an ongoing presence in the community.
All right, thank you, Dr. Snyder.
This is Jill Wynott. I also want to add that some of the rule development efforts will also help reduce the odors. So proposed Rule 1430, which is directed at the metal grinding at the forging facilities, that should also help reduce the odors.
Thank you, Jill. Last part of Lisa's question is, will all schools in Paramount Unified School District be monitored? So did I understand that you will not be monitoring Jackson as well?
This is Jason. So right now we're looking at the schools to monitor, focusing in the schools that are south of the 105 and north of the 91, because those are the ones primarily that are nearby the industrial areas. If we have data that suggests to go outside those bounds, of course, we'll take a look at that. But that is our initial kind of boundaries on the north-south side. With regards to Jackson, I think we mentioned a little bit of information about that. We already did have some samples that were collected at Jackson, and we are moving to a location on essentially the same property that is closer to the potential source. So we feel that with being at Gaines, that would be able to cover both. And if we do see some levels of concern, then we can go back, but we're going to let the data decide for us for that decision.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Lisa had a follow-up question to share. Does that mean that other 70 to 80 companies were operating without a license to operate with the city?
I'm not sure that we could conclude that necessarily. It may be that some of those companies don't require a license to operate within the city, so I think your question kind of makes it sound like maybe they needed one and they didn't have one. But I will tell you that one of the objectives of our multi-agency inspections was to identify facilities not only that required an AQMD permit, but also because we had city code enforcement officers with us, to identify whether there might be facilities that did require a permit with the city. I don't have that information from the city at this point. They may have found some additional businesses that required permits, but I can't imagine it would be in the vicinity of 70 or 80. I think it was probably only a few, if any.
Thank you, Dr. Snyder. Again, if you have any questions, please submit them to publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. We're going to be silent for a couple minutes to see if we get any other questions. Okay, got another question from Lisa. So the question is, has AQMD ever put error monitors on stop signs? We'll be able to find out exactly how many companies were unpermitted by the city. So let's go with the first part. Has AQMD ever put error monitors on stop signs?
This is Jason, and no, we have not.
Okay, thank you, Jason. And then the next question is, I'm assuming, will you be able to find out, or will we be able to find out exactly how many companies were unpermitted by the city?
I think that's probably something that you should ask the city about. We don't have that information.
Thank you, Dr. Snyder.
Thank you.
Again, we'll be silent until we get another question. Okay, I got a question from Michelle Lewis. Says, on their teachers and residents in Hollydale area north of the 105 are requesting monitoring. Resident recently diagnosed with lung cancer, young, non-smoker, very concerned. I'm not sure if those are questions, but I guess the first one is kind of a question, that the teachers and residents are requesting a monitor north of the 105 freeway. So let us confer, and we'll get back.
Yeah, so this is Jason. Like I mentioned before, we're evaluating based upon some of the other schools that would be closer to the 105. I believe like Los Cerritos, Tanner, and Wirtz. I mean, those are some schools that are more on the north side, so we'll evaluate some of that data. We'll evaluate, again, more information as becomes available if there are potential sources or any information that leads to monitoring, reasons to provide monitoring north of the 105.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Another question from Lisa Lappin. Question is, does Edison have to get permission from the city to put error monitors on their poles?
This is Jason. No, they do not.
And the answer was no, they do not. Thank you, Dr. Lowe. We'll be silent until we get some more questions. Again, if you'd like to submit questions, please email them to publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. We're waiting for questions. We'll wait about two more minutes. Thank you. Okay, got a question from Lisa Lappin. Why wouldn't you just monitor all the schools to give the community peace of mind? So what did the city mean by saying they waive their encroachment permits for the air monitors? So I'll let Dr. Lowe answer this question. Why wouldn't you just monitor all schools to give the community peace of mind?
So this is Jason again. So as you recall, there's a balance of trying to look at the levels of sources that we know of, which are the two facilities, and then also trying to go to other areas that we can prioritize based upon potential emissions, based upon feedback that we get from the inspection and compliance group. So we're trying to prioritize where we place our monitoring resources, and if again we're trying to focus on areas of likely areas which are kind of in the zone that we identified and in accordance to the plan too.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. And then also, Dr. Lowe, the second part, so what did the city mean by when they waived their encroachment permits for the air monitors?
I don't think I could respond to that specific comment to the city.
From the city?
Yeah, I mean, they were, we worked with them to first identify if they were the ones responsible to allow access, and they researched it for us when we did the inquiry, and we found out together independently that it was Edison who had the access rights to the pole. So as far as they helped as far as the process of identifying who the responsible party was for access, and we were able to work with Edison to get that access.
Okay, we'll be silent, waiting for more questions. Again, if people just joined us, you can submit your questions to publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. Okay, we got a question from, it looks like, Melissa Parra. Please go over this violation from Paramount Petroleum.
There's an attachment.
Let me see here. So it looks like it was issued in August?
It was October.
The date was August.
Violation date is August. It was issued in October.
So the notice of violation was inspection found vapor leak greater than 50,000 ppm VOC. Inspection found vapor, emissions greater than 500 ppm VOC found from wastewater system. Sure.
So, yes, this is Cher. So the facility was cited for a violation of our Rule 1173, which, as you see from the rule description, governs fugitive emissions of volatile organic compounds. And one of our inspectors who had been on site used a measurement device that registered over 50,000 ppm at one particular location, a vapor leak. And another at 500 ppm, and also found there was one leak that was unique to the wastewater system also at the facility. And if you would like more details, you're welcome to contact me by email. I'd be happy to share with you my email address, or I can just, since I have yours, why don't I just get back to you at your email address and I can provide you with additional details.
I'll forward your email to Dr. Snyder, and then she'll respond.
Thank you, Melissa.
So we'll be, okay, got another question from Lisa Lappin. question is, why would AQMD have to pay the Sheriff's Department from their own budget if they needed to serve a warrant and needed protection? What is the protocol?
This is Kurt Weiss, the General Counsel. No, we don't pay the sheriffs if they go with us to assist in serving a warrant. And the protocol is, in circumstances where we think we may need assistance, to contact the Sheriff's Department, and they've always been extremely cooperative.
So hopefully that answered your question, Lisa. We'll be silent, waiting for questions. About another minute. Again, if you'd like to submit a question, please submit it to publicadvisor@aqmd.gov. Okay, we haven't received any more emails. Thank you very much. That concludes this call for today. We'll see you again next Tuesday. Oh, Lisa just submitted a question. Thank you, Lisa. Here we go. Question is, what cities in Los Angeles have stricter pollution controls than AQMD itself, as you said, is possibly, you said possibly last week?
This is Kurt Weiss, the General Counsel. I'm not aware of any cities that have use the code section that allows cities to have more stringent requirements than the AQMD. So I believe that there are none.
We'll wait about a minute. What code section is it? That's Lisa Lappin's question. Go ahead. We're looking it up right now. Please bear with us. It's
California Health and Safety Code, section 41509.
Thank you very much, Kurt. Melissa Parra, question. At the last town hall meeting, we were told that the volatile organic compounds coming from Paramount Petroleum was benzene. Can you go over the health impact? Joe Kay, are you still on the phone where you can answer that question?
Hi, this is Joe Kay. Sorry, I was just coughing. So the question is about the health impact of benzene, is that correct?
Yes.
You know, benzene, I think, you know, as many people may already know, is a carcinogen, and similar to other carcinogens, again, it's about long-term kind of cumulative exposure, you know, which would, you know, cause an increased risk of cancer. The specific types of cancer that benzene is most closely associated with are blood cancers, for example, leukemia. So those are probably the primary concerns when it comes to benzene. So There are other kind of non-cancer risks of anything, but primarily related to changes to the blood.
All right, thank you, Jill Kay.
This is Jill Wynett. I just want to add VOCs, or volatile organic compounds, is a large class of types of chemicals. Benzene is one type of VOCs, but there are also a lot of other chemicals too. So if you see a reading of VOC, it does not necessarily mean that that's all benzene. It may be a very small or a small amount of that, depending on what it's from. In some cases, it could be 100%, but just because you see a VOC number, don't assume that's all benzene.
Okay, we'll wait about a minute for any more questions. Okay, Lisa Lappin has another question. So, question is, in 2011, a violation was given to Paramount Petroleum for turning off their pumps that were pumping the benzene plume under Paramount Petroleum. Is this plume still being monitored? Do you know the size? I'll let Dr. Snyder answer that question.
Lisa, let me get back to you offline after this call is concluded. I can call you either this evening or perhaps better tomorrow when we've had an opportunity to look into this for you.
So generally, though, this is Wayne Nastri. This is generally under the authority of the Regional Water Quality Control Board. This is not something that the South Coast Air Quality Management District would be monitoring, but because we've been working with the regional boards, we'll reach out to them and try to get this question answered.
Okay, then Melissa Parra, she has another follow-up question. I wasn't assuming, I was going off what we were told at the meeting. Please discuss impacts of all VOCs. Joe Kay, you want to answer that one?
So that's a pretty broad question. So VOCs are like a group of many different kinds, many different individual chemicals, I guess. And so when we talk about health effects, typically we talk about some of the kind of main VOCs that that have some health effects associated with it. I think of those. So among the VOCs, we may see an abbreviation of BTEX, that's BTEX, which stands for benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, and xylene. And so these are, again, four particular chemicals within the group of air pollutants called VOCs. Among those, benzene is typically the one that has been associated with more strongly associated with health effects compared to the others. There are others, and we can certainly touch base. You can maybe Derek can forward me your email, and we can touch base. If you're interested in the health effects of these other pollutants.
Okay, Joe K, I just forwarded you the email right now. So, Melissa, she'll get back to you tomorrow on this. Okay. I'll give it about a minute for more questions. Okay. Got a question from Lisa Lappin. Will fence line monitoring be conducted at Paramount Petroleum, especially given that its borders as elementary school and is near a high school and has had over 40 notice of violations in the past decades?
Currently that is not scheduled. I think the overall assessment of the oil and gas within the South Coast Basin will be evaluated, and And if the monitoring strategy is to move forward on that, we will assess the priorities, given the information we have, and go through there. But as part of the oil and gas petroleum, Paramount Petroleum would be part of that. So it'll just, again, be part of that consideration.
So this is Wayne Nastri. And what the district is doing in the coming year is actually looking at fence line and community monitoring for refineries. And so this is something that we will be addressing. This is something not part of the specific Paramount focus that we're looking at, but an overall focus on refineries within the South Coast region. And as I said before, that includes fence line and community monitoring. So, you know, we hope that you'll be engaged on the rulemaking effort in that particular regard, as it hopefully will address the issues that you're concerned about.
Thank you, Wayne. We'll wait about a minute for more questions.
So we got another call from another email from Lisa Lappin. Will the district be making rules for the hundreds of unregulated grinding facilities throughout the basin? So we've discussed the approach. There's several approaches that we might be taking in regards to regulating grinding operations from metal facilities. And so one would be, as we're amending and adopting additional rules that affect metalworking facilities, we would include provisions for grinding. And another is that we could develop a universal grinding rule. So we're looking into that in terms of, you know, what would be the best approach. And I guess just continue to watch our rule forecast. Oh, this is Susan Nakamura.
Thank you, Susan. Wait about 30 seconds for another question. Okay, thank you very much. That concludes the call. We'll see you next week. Thank you very much.